in mixology. To cut on the wheel so viciously. Boom, boom, goes the beat to rock the nation. Beats receive mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Come here, freak. Velosa MC, Dr. Dre, operate in surgery.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty, I'd be a millionaire. My clothes may still be torn and tattered.
To me, being a gangster was better than being president of the United States.
What's going on? You're rocking with Young Paris. You're now listening to WGXC 90.7 Acre. Catskill, Hudson, free hands-on radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Listening to the test site of Acoustic Commons, available at wavefarm.org/listen or on any wgxc.org webpage if you click on the listen button. The test site of Acoustic Commons is a microphone in the Wavefarm woods that lets you overhear the sounds of nature, the live weather on the radio at wavefarm.org/listen, or click on any WGXC.org webpage. Click on the listen button to hear the sounds in the woods at Wave Farm through the test site of Acoustic Commons. If you would like to be on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM, now's your chance. Want to fulfill a long-time or newly emerging desire to be on the radio? Want to become part of the community conversations on Wavefarm's WGXC 90.7 FM radio for open ears? You have an idea for a short recurring segment? Then come on out to the Catskill Library on Saturday, May 13th at 10 a.m., or tune into a Zoom meeting May 30th at 6 p.m. online. Contact content at WGXC.org to register and with any questions, but we would love as many voices as possible to be on the radio at WGXC, and this is your chance.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Celia Graham of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are listening to Transmission Arts programming on WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXC will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Next, we hear from radio artist Scanner and the wireless rupture mix of his song Trawl with Bill Laswell. It was released in 2021.
Reply, press hash. To hear more options, press O. Reply sent. To erase this message erased. Next message.
Esto demuestra que no aceptan a los políticos tradicionales. Quieren una persona más capacitada para esa posición. Por eso, Golisano es una esperanza para Nueva York. El 8 de noviembre, usted puede votar por uno de esos dos políticos que lleva más de una década viviendo de los contribuyentes.
To erase this message, press 7. To reply to it, press 8. At the tone, record your reply to
Selena Harper.
Then press hush.
around here for me.
Anyway, I can't say too much because the warm's damped. Oh, I still hear you.
You'll call me back in a while.
No, I'm okay. I'm upstairs with my mum. But you're going there. I can't say it. Anyway, it needs loving to endocrine. It's enormous.
Yeah.
But John, I want you to see it.
Yeah.
You know. But with, you know.
Has it got lager?
No, but there's a place for it.
Right.
Yeah, but they don't use half the room.
Yeah, I see. Well, I mean, well, you know, what we don't want to do is to be paying a huge amount of rent, so.
No, I quite agree.
And, you know, half the
windows don't. Yeah, no, well, I mean, you know, half of them don't open either. But, you know.
It's a lovely home.
I want you to see it.
Right.
I want you to see it.
Right, okay.
So, I mean, the thing to do is ring Graham tomorrow, and I will call Julia. And say, is there a possibility? In fact, what we could do is look at it on our way back from, I'll give her a ring anyway. Yeah, okay. You got back all right? Good. Good. Oh, right.
Shall I ring the cab company and send you a cab?
Well, the thing is, that's annoying. Owen isn't here.
he's gone to look for a cab, and I don't know how he hasn't found one. I saw millions drive past.
He hasn't got his PIN number.
Wait. Well, I've never had one.
Owen's trying. He can't get one.
There's never. I can't believe
he's
it.
He's got all the bags.
He's
got my
car.
It's
so much easier.
Yeah, James, all right, quietly. If you are still there, why didn't you wait inside the flat?
Well, we are waiting inside the flat. But we wouldn't look out for the cab. We ordered a quarter past. It was not even here.
James, you should ring them. And what did they say?
We ordered it. We rang them. And then Owen rang them, yeah?
And what did they say?
And they asked about it. And they took them to the local people. And they just left him ringing.
No. You're saying you ordered it. Is he coming back yet?
Because I don't have my PIN, I've got my number, which is, I don't see why you need the number.
Yeah, listen, if Owen comes back to you, I will get your cab. I'll send it to Natalie's place now.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter, does it?
It does, because it will go on our account from here.
Yeah, but they won't be here by the time we go.
Well, they'll be back 10 minutes.
Because found something in the last few minutes.
Well, if he comes back and he hasn't got one, ring me. And I'll get them on to you straight away.
Can you ring the company and ask them what the hell happened to them? Say my son ordered a cab, and he ordered it, for Carnegie Road 22, and it hasn't turned up. And what's wrong with them? And
okay, you had a fight with them. Okay, so what is the telephone number? Do you know? It's 071.
736.
Yeah.
I mustn't admit it, must I?
No, absolutely not.
All right, dear.
God bless.
Bye.
Bye.
My work is done. I have fought a good fight.
That was a 2021 release from the radio artist Scanner, his Trawl Wireless Rupture mix with Bill Laswell on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
England. A Victorian tyrant lives in her castle and is obsessed with beautiful lacework, as per the ancient custom. She conscripts a coterie of small children to be trained in the art of lace making. Day in, day out, they make the lace for her in the basement, a veritable lace dungeon. Pin cushions and looms sit next to thumb screws and the rack. The girls never have time off, not even on Catherine's Day. She surrounds herself with increasingly intricate lacework, draping herself in it, running it over her face, eyes closed, standing naked before the morning sun pouring through the stone slit windows, wrapped only in the finest lace, lace made by the abuse and conscription of children. If a lace child did not keep up the necessary speed in lace making, the tyrant would bind her eyes and ears, put pins in her feet, and she had to keep making the lace in the dark, immobile. If a lace child performed her duties with speed and quality, she may sit by the window, and she may have a cookie, one per week, and she may have the tea dregs, but never shall she stop making the lace. The tyrant's husband was a blow-vading dandy, obsessed with Egyptian esoteric and occult practices. He was a member of the Golden Dawn, the Hyboreal Kingdom, and the Idolic Order of the Twelve Flames. He spent most of his time decanting drugs in his castle laboratory. He was already an addict of the drugs that removed him from this mortal plane. Another drug made him speak very fast, and one drug made him see things only half there, and one drug made him so sensitive that he could hear you speaking in the garden from the top of the castle. One day, the tyrant received the latest batch of lace from below, and she pulled it out of the box to let it drape across her face and body in her usual ritual. She disrobed to pull the fastest lace across her skin. But one of the girls, one who had fallen far behind, the one who was most abused and harangued, the one who was most rebellious, The one who sat in the corner with her eyes and feet bound. The one kept furthest from the fresh air. Had used her punished hands, flitting across the lace pillow with a sightless technique born on the back of passionate hatred for her tormentor. A technique from deep in her bones, she felt the hands of her mother and grandmother, long dead, guiding her in the darkness. This girl wove into the lace a series of rusted shavings that she had pulled from her own boots, bound in the lace in the form of a seven-pointed star, a symbol she remembered from her father's vestments. She remembered when he came dressed for battle to retrieve her, when the tyrant's magistrate had taken her from the storehouse. She remembered how angry her father was, and the cursed look in his eyes when the tyrant's men had struck him down. Her hands had woven these rusted shards into the family pattern, a curse to be applied directly to the tyrant's skin. As the tyrant pulled the lace across her body, the shards embedded in her skin at seven points, forming the heptagram of familial revenge, and she felt the fetid poison of rust and offal enter her. She was enraged. The tyrant grabbed up her golden whip and rushed to the dungeon workshop. She flayed the little girl brutally, but she was arrogant, crazed with the idea that her skin had been defiled and that the lace had been turned against her. So in between strikes of the whip, she got close to the bound little girl to gloat and spit upon her. And in that moment, the little girl saw her chance. She pulled out a needle she had dipped in rat blood, a rat she had found in the darkness, one that had come to her, whispered to her of revenge, and died of explosive pustules. The tyrant was shocked to be struck so, her skin further violated, her lace marred by spreading blood. She yelped and whimpered suddenly like an animal and ran back to her tower. Over the next few nights, she wrapped more and more lace around her to cover the encroaching pustules that began to consume her. The tumors were painful, a pain only abated by a covering of lace.
Covered in lace. Covered in lace.
She added more lace as the pain and deformation increased.
Forever bound in lace. Forever bound in lace.
Her husband heard her skin from the garden. It was so loud. And he found her in her lace tower. He had just taken several massive doses of a new concoction of his drugs via an electrical and steam-powered drug alchemy throne machine of his own design. He could now see auras and smell time. He found her covered in her lace and her body underneath marred with oozing pustules. To him, she looked like a pharaoh ready for the sarcophagus, like the one he had seen while in Egypt, while he was robbing the graves of kings. He looked through space and time, and he knew what to do. He took her into his laboratory, placed her on his throne, and removed her organs according to the old rites, rites that were not his, and so he perverted them horribly. And he mummified her in her lace. And so the tyrant was transported through time, cursed by those she had tormented, and doomed to return, a mummy wrapped in lace. It seemed impossible that something like that was now in a pine box in the back of a Toyota Tacoma in Niagara Falls, New York. Grace stood in the motel parking lot and turned the instructions over in her hand, checking to see if she had missed something. The box had shown up in a Lake Ontario port, and she had received the strange, slightly oily manila folder, emblazoned with a heraldic crest of a seven-headed dragon clutching a pincushion wrapped around a shield. She had received it at the headquarters of her Task Rabbit knockoff temp job, WizGigs. Grace was also confused as to why the whole story was written on the shipping receipt, or why it was important to rent the Pine Box a room at this particular Niagara motel, or why it was important to hang a single scrap of lace across the window of the motel room before leaving the box. Oh well, Grace thought as she quickly moved to stop her own questioning and curious mind. Just do this job and go home. Complete the instructions and clock out. Do your shift report and go home, Grace. She felt it was important to not get obsessed with the details of the jobs that came through the teal and purple WizGigs app, lest she waste any more of her time. It was crazy to receive a real manila folder on a WizGigs job, instead of the usual 3,000 or so short text message instructions via the app. This job didn't pay well enough to get worked up over who set up all these instructions, or who was waiting to dig up the motel key she was supposed to... what was it again? Bury in a jar in front of the Cheektowaga Rock Burger? Or get too worked up over whose black handprints were all over the pine box when it came out of the shipping container in Hamilton. She didn't want to know. She only read the story because, at first, it looked like it was part of the instructions. She found she couldn't stop reading, and this was already asking more of her than most WizGig things did. Unfortunately, now she knew that there was apparently a lace mummy in the pine box. Grace fished in the folder to find the other strange item that came as part of this job. A single golden coin. What? Put it in the machine at the front desk? Fine. Grace looked for the front desk of the old ratty motel with the melted sign. It looked like no one was around, yet there were fuzzy lights on in some of the rooms. Just a suggestion of people. A completely hollowed out presence. She found and entered the small, dusty lobby. There, at the counter, where by all rights there should be an old man ready to give you a leer and a dirty key, was instead a drab, bulbous machine made of brass, festooned with knobs, slots, and a dish. It had the vague outline of a corpulent Buddha statue. The large, cylindrical glass flask attached to the top seemed to house a series of gears and zigzag bulb filaments. There was a number of slots that appeared to take many different coins. There was a slot for loonies, and a slot for quarters, and other larger slots for coins she couldn't quite recognize. She held the golden coin up to each, until she found the appropriately sized one and shoved it in. The machine gave a craggy click, and the gears visible in the glass bulb turned. Orange light flared from within, giving off the smell of beef tallow and cloves. A key clattered into the bowl attached to the desk. When Grace picked it up, she noticed that there was a small scrap of lace attached to it. So, put the lace mummy in the lace room. Okay, Grace mumbled to herself. She didn't want to know. She was just going to load the box into whatever room and not think about how it apparently contained the corpse of a tortured Victorian tyrant wrapped in French alençon, Swiss entredue, and chantilly. She was going to go home and not think about the old lace-covered hands brandishing the golden whip, or the alchemical clouds seething from a beating, glowing purple heart, or the lace tendrils that moved like vines in the dark. She was going to go bury the key at the Rock Burger, eat the Cheesecake Wonder, and pass out. And she would never consciously think of lace again, even as her fingers sneak in to pet the scrap still in her jacket pocket, dancing across the crocheted weave, corporeally delighting in the lattice of white knots, as old as the foam of the falls.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits. What's love got to do? Stop to do, 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 stop to do,
right? So then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like...
Back in LA, some restrictions apply.
It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11.
Some restrictions apply.
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report. First of all, the headlines. Welcome Wagon runs over newcomer. Good Humor Man slays 10. Pen Pal stabs pal with pen. Pediatrician dies of childhood disease. And Jacques Cousteau drowns in bathtub accident. We'll be back with full details in just a moment after this word from Cooley's Cigarettes.
You know something, Bill? These cigarettes of mine, they taste like crap. Say, Dan. Crappy taste. Why don't you try the cool, refreshing taste of Cooley's? Coolies, eh? You smoke them? Nope, found them in the subway toilet.
And now back to the news. History's 135th heart transplant operation was performed yesterday in New York City. One unusual note, the heart transplant took place in Central Park at midnight, and the donor's family was not consulted. Dr. Timothy Leary's brother, really Leary, today announced the formation of a new religion which teaches that when you die, your soul goes to a garage in Buffalo. Police today arrested Margaret Fulcrum, a 45-year-old unregistered nurse, and charged her with accepting collect obscene telephone calls. Famed television announcer Charlie the Tuna was found dead today of mercury poisoning. Sorry, Charlie. Good news from the Far East. No one was killed in Vietnam today. However, three people died of old age at the Paris peace talks. And former French President Charles de Gaulle rose from the dead today, just to show everyone he could really do it. Well, that's it from the news desk for the latest in sports. Here's Biff Barf. Good evening, sport fans. Biff Barf here in the Biff Barf Sportlight Spotlight, picking them up and barfing them right back at you. I call them the way I see them, and if I don't see them, I make them up. No games today. However, we do have a few late football scores still coming in from the far west. Guam Prep, 45. Marshall Islands, 14. Mindanao A&M, 27. Molokai, 10. Caltech, 14.5. MIT, 3 to the 4th power. William and Mary, 6. Nick and Tony, 105. And here's a partial score. Stanford, 29. Well, that's it, kids. That's it from the scoreboard in the world of golf today in the Fats Domino Desert Classic. First round leader Willie Waterhazard had a birdie, two eagles, and a duck this afternoon. Meanwhile, the favorite Gary Fairway was way behind, scoring a record 609 strokes on the front nine when he accidentally stepped aboard a bus to Minneapolis while playing a difficult lie from the highway. Well, that's it, sport fans. Join me tomorrow afternoon on the ever-widening world of sports when I'll be presenting the National Two-Man Pall-Bearing Championships. And next week, I'll be a guest hunter on American Sportsman. Six of us are going to kill a rabbit. Now, with the latest in weather, here's Al Sleet, your hippy-dippy weatherman.
Weatherman brought to you by Parsons Pest Control. Do you have termites, water bugs, and roaches? Parsons will get rid of the termites and water bugs and help you smoke the roaches. Present temperature is 68 degrees at the airport. Which is stupid, because I don't know anyone who lives at the airport. Downtown, it's much hotter. Downtown's on fire, man. Now, if you'll take a look at our national weather map, you'll see that we don't have one. So try to picture last night's map in your mind. Remember all those lines and numbers. Weather was dominated by a large Canadian low, which is not to be confused with a Mexican high. Tonight's forecast, dark. Continued mostly dark tonight. Turning to widely scattered light in the morning. That's it from Al Sleet. Don't forget, if you don't like the weather, move.
Thanks, Al. Always a great report from Al Sleet. I think we all know by now Al's been into the mushrooms. Well, that just about wraps it up on the 7 o'clock report. Join us again tomorrow night at 9 for the 11 o'clock news. In the meantime, stay tuned for a brand new comedy series, Double Trouble, the story of Siamese twins joined at the lips. And the merry mix-ups that occur when one gets married and the other has root canal work the same day. Good night, all. That's the news. That's the news.
Thank you. Thank you, man. Thank you. Thank you.
Max Headroom is a virtual media personality, a character created by George Stone, Annabelle Jankel, and Rocky Morton. He is portrayed by Matt Frewer and has been featured in multiple films, television shows, and advertising campaigns since his debut in 1985. On November 22, 1987, an example of life imitating art, two Chicago television broadcasts were interrupted, hijacked by unknown perpetrators. On WGN Channel 9 at 9 p.m. for 25 seconds, and then again for about 90 seconds 2 hours later on WTTW Channel 11. Someone wearing a rubber Max Headroom full head mask and sunglasses appeared on screen speaking gibberish about a variety of seemingly disconnected subjects, while behind him a physical piece of corrugated metal rotated in a manner similar to the digital background lines of Max's videos. The interruptions ended with the assailant's exposed hindquarters being struck with a fly swatter, and then, you know, back to the news. To this day, no one has ever been caught, and no one knows who did it.
The video pirates, who managed to scramble Chicago airwaves. The pirates interrupted WGN and WTTW programming with a show of their own. Our Mike Kirsch has more.
Channel 11's Doctor Who was unexpectedly knocked off the TV screen last night by a broadcast pirate disguised as Max Headroom. The wacky and at times perverse TV surprise came shortly after 11 o'clock, lasting about a minute and a half. The same thing happened at WGN's 9 o'clock news broadcast earlier in the evening.
Someone wants to get into your house, they can find a way to do that. And I guess likewise, if someone wants to interfere with your signal, they can find a way to do that.
The FCC says the pirates were able to use stronger microwave signals to override the television signals which are transmitted from the Hancock and Sears towers.
I'd like to inform anybody involved in this kind of thing that there's a maximum penalty of $100,000, 1 year in jail or both.
The broadcast pirate who broke into HBO programming about a year and a half ago and threatened HBO with this message was caught by the FCC and fined $5,000 and was put on 1 year probation. The FCC says the wise guys who pulled off this latest stunt are in very big trouble. Mike Kirsch, the 10 o'clock news.
The FCC says or warns that should the pirates try it again, it will only make it easier for the FCC to track them down.
This is our first transmission since the event. All four souls aboard are present and accounted for. I wonder if a ship with no name is capable of reaching any destination at all. I've searched every inch of the vessel for an indication of her identity, but nothing remains. Performing the search has become a daily ritual for me. I wake in the morning and retrace my steps, starting on the main deck and working my way down to the hull and cargo chamber. She did once have a name, that much is clear. I see where her letters and symbols have been worn away. Flecks of gold cling to her surface. Years ago, when the skies first went dry, it was quite common to encounter these vessels. They were messenger ships and carried endangered and precious cargo, much like we're carrying today. Our lives now revolve around sustaining and preserving dwindling resources. We've been traveling now for nearly a year, making only necessary stops to gather soil and water samples. Our navigator has become quite neurotic with its data gathering, calculations, and projections. Measurements of time make it most on edge. I wasn't aware robots were prone to depression, but it's the nearest I can ascribe to its faulty condition. It's confused as to why we remain in a perpetual drift. It haunts the upper decks at twilight, measuring the stars against the horizon and obsessively poring over the same data. The data doesn't change. It's designed to simulate organic rhythms as to better integrate with humans. It sleeps at night, giving the appearance of rest. But we know machines don't ever really rest. The captain remains steadfast at the helm, his eyes methodically searching the empty distance. He assures us our course is direct, though we can all sense the diverging. The captain grows increasingly withdrawn and retires to his cabin for prolonged durations. This leaves us with a certain lack of confidence in completing the mission at hand. Echo has taken refuge in the crow's nest where she communes with her telescope. We haven't a clue what she aims to see as she turns the lens upon herself and gazing for hours upon hours, only occasionally lifting it to the sky to search for stars.
At interdate, we've lost track of time. My body and ship are one. Steel bones and boards lumbering over broken waves. We detoured unexpectedly several nights ago. I mustn't alarm the crew, but we are drifting. I've got no problem with drifting. I've got no problem with hacking off limbs. A gutted system is where we began and where we'll begin. This drifting is, shall we say, unusual. The ship breathes on her own and ignores all attempts at navigation. For now, I've given it, and I'm quite content to allow the current to take us where she will.
Plays upon my memory, loops unforgiving my aim. Academy, the Bird of Young. Speech and tongue fury saying nary a word. Silence breaks bleak and an incomplete repeats our words. Woe are the winds through these sails. Woe are the unfamiliar tones. The mistress swam rogue, reckless beloved limbs, liquid suspension turned dim and dialed under the breath of winds. Reflections bear witness as lonesome sight holds her tongue and bears delight the mystery does not reveal. The tender blue of morning woke an echo whisper and muffled chokes and I wear circling birds. Her garment blue a flower scent and there she flowed benevolent a twist of hair and water. Gaze cast to the depths. Spun from disbelief, we, our lips set in grief, the cause of our effect unleashed. The frail face hangs as dumbly. Now water, now air, now soul, now drift.
Specialist was to oversee the project. Now he was faced delivering the unfortunate news. The captain has delayed her autopsy until we reach land. Technically, the navigation robot is qualified to perform such activities, but due to the scrambling of his memory, we are certain such a task would cause only further damage. The issue of mortality, assimilation, and conscious simulating machines has always been a bit glitchy.
Her creaks and moans blow through me. Muscle and flesh ache. I've lost my sea legs, an alarming notion. The ship mourns her as I do, as do we all. How long this condition will remain, I cannot say. The current takes us freely, and we give it no resistance. I have no words to describe the stillness, the vacancy she's left behind. Our last conversation was in the greenhouse. I remember the smell of damp earth and burst of